All right, folks, welcome to According to Sam. This is episode 195. I have been doing this podcast, I guess, for about 3 years now, and this is my 195th episode. The majority of those episodes are audio episodes. I just started doing this video format beginning in January, and it's going well so far. I like being able to not only tell you things, but also show you things that that I was unable to show you in the audio format. You can still listen to the format through the audio platforms, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, all of that. But still, you can watch the podcast on YouTube, on Rumble, on X. And then also, if you're looking for the archive of all of the video or audio podcasts that I've done in the past, you can go to my Substack. Substack's got everything. Substack's got the archive of the audio podcasts that I've done over the years. It's got the latest video podcast there. Also, pieces, articles that I've written on my Substack there. So that's where you can get everything. But what a wonderful time to be alive, folks. If you are blessed to be alive in this period of time, and you know about human history, and you can see where human history is going, to be alive in this time where we are able to enjoy the small amount of freedoms that we're able to enjoy during this time. We are very blessed to be alive during this time. So it's springtime, my favorite time of year. I hope you guys had a great weekend. I hope you are having a good 2024 so far. And I have a lot that I want to share with you guys today. So let's get right into today's podcast. Today, I'm going to start off with a new ad that the Biden campaign put out today. And if you haven't been living under a rock, you have heard about this bloodbath, this bloodbath controversy, hoax, whatever you want to call it. So this past weekend, Donald Trump was doing one of his rallies in Ohio, and he used the word bloodbath, and the media, his detractors, the Biden administration, as you're getting ready to see, or the Biden campaign, not the administration, Biden campaign, as you're getting ready to see, are seizing on the word bloodbath and taking it out of context. And I want you to see this ad. This ad would put Joseph Goebbels to shame. Joseph Goebbels is looking up at the Biden campaign right now and smiling because this propaganda is so good. But I want to use this to kind of show, you know, how they've been doing this since 2015, when Donald Trump came down the escalator in Trump Tower and announced that he was running for president as a Republican. I mean, he used to be a Democrat. They loved him when he was a Democrat. But when he announced he was running as a Republican, everything that he said, every platform and position, even in that speech that he gave there in Trump Tower in 2015, when he announced that he was running, where he was saying, you know, that, the immigration issue, can you believe that? That's been a centerpiece of his campaign going back to 2015, but They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. Some of them are good people. They're rapists. Some of them are rapists. I remember the interview he did with Don Lemon after that. And he started telling Don Lemon, they have rape trees where they have women's panties in the trees that they've raped as a payment for crossing over the border. And we've known this. And Don Lemon says, well, those are people that are getting raped on the other side of the border. And Trump says, well, somebody's doing the raping. But even going back to 2015, this guy was just taken out of context. The media is disgusting in the way that they do this. Take small little clips. You're going to know this in this new Joe Biden ad. They don't play the full context of what he's saying. Just play the little clips, keep editing it and clipping it to where they can make him say whatever they want him to say, like clipping and editing like that. Whatever they want him to say, they can make it. And it's propaganda. Take a look at this ad.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath, and it's going to be a bloodbath.
Look at this edit. So they edit him just saying bloodbath.
It's going to be a bloodbath, and it's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
And then they edit in the Unite the Right rally that happened before the riot that they had in Virginia in Charlottesville, Virginia. If you don't remember, they were going to remove the statue of Robert E. Lee, and there was this huge protest at this park in Charlottesville where the Robert E. Lee statue was, and you had people that were being bussed in. You had neo-Nazis, and then the night before that event, this separate event, Unite the Right, where you had these guys walking around with tiki torches saying Jews will not replace us. So this Joe Biden ad is conflating all these lies together, because you're going to see they bring in the very fine people lie that Trump called the neo-Nazis very fine people is what he was accused of. Again, taking his words out of context, using it to get an emotional response from the electorate, creating ads out of it. This is absolutely disgusting.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath, and it's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
Jews will not replace us!
But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
Are you willing to condemn white supremacists and militia groups?
Proud Boys, stand back and stand by.
Please pause for the horribly and unfair.
Listen to the music, too.
January 6th hostages.
There'd be a lot of pardons and commutations of January 6th defendants.
Yes, absolutely.
You tell your supporters now, no matter what, no violence.
And it's going to be a bloodbath.
Wow, man. Oh, got to hear the end, because you got to get that dramatic sound at the end. Boom. Biden Harris.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's...
Oh, my God, man. So the thing is that no, I was getting ready to say, who's falling for this? No one is falling for this. Now, in 2015, when the media had power, before people realized what was going on, this was very effective. In 2016, very effective. It was very effective in 2015, but I mean in 2020, but this isn't effective anymore. The electorate is very, very, they're hip to what's going on with this game. Just editing this guy, taking him out of context. This should be illegal. All these people talking about misinformation and disinformation. Oh, there's misinformation and disinformation. This ad, this political ad, is misinformation and disinformation, both. Now, the word bloodbath, everyone was sharing the definition. it's funny because all of these definitions are figurative. No one's actually filling up a bathtub with blood and getting in the bathtub and, oh, I'm taking a blood bath. No, it's all of it. All three of these definitions here are figurative. Not a single one is literal. Now, the first definition, a great slaughter, that's not a literal bloodbath. It's a bloodbath is figurative speech for a great slaughter. A notably, second definition here, a notably fierce and violent and destructive contest or struggle. That's not actually getting in a bathtub with blood and taking a bath. This is a figure of speech. A major economic disaster. That's not a bloodbath either. That's not someone getting in a bathtub with blood. This is a figure of speech for a major economic disaster. And the media knows this. The media understands this very clearly. Take a listen.
Reports tonight on the, quote, bloodbath at the RNC.
Headlines calling it a, quote, bloodbath.
Yeah, bloodbath. Not only is it going to be a bloodbath, but after they leave New Hampshire, it's a bloodbath on her home turf.
So these are the same media talking heads that have been all weekend accusing Trump of calling for violence because he used the word bloodbath pertaining to, well, we'll talk about what he was talking about in context when he used the word bloodbath, but these same media talking heads that have been criticizing him all weekend and playing on people's emotions, pushing propaganda, just like Joe Biden does there in that ad. This is all of them using the word bloodbath figuratively. And it's shameful.
He's left a lot of corpses in his wake. I mean, we can count the bodies as part of the, quote, MAGA drive to take over Maricopa County. And the headline refers to it as an impending bloodbath. Columnist Charles Blow has a new piece for the New York Times entitled A Biden Bloodbath.
2018 midterms, you can bet that they 100% are fearing a slaughter. In fact, the word bloodbath and massacre come up frequently.
The Republican Party will be destroyed. It's going to be a bloodbath.
There's going to be a bloodbath one way or the other.
Bloodbath for Bernie Sanders.
Bloodbath.
They're shaping up to be a bloodbath.
Head off a bloodbath in next year's crucial midterm.
Off-year elections are often a bloodbath.
This is a bloodbath.
A bloodbath at the ballot box.
There could be a Republican bloodbath.
They'll talk about a bloodbath.
It's a bloodbath. I have to talk about you. And
it's going
to
be a bloodbath all day long.
Is in for a bloodbath.
Has a bloodbath on the way down.
Bloodbath.
And they did this, if you guys remember, when Trump was impeached for January 6th, because he said, you got to fight like hell. And then they put together a montage of clips of the same talking heads that criticize him. When he says, you got to fight like hell for your country, that he's telling them to go to the Capitol and to fight the police. And then they put together a montage of clips of these same dishonest talking heads using the word fight as a rhetorical device, figuratively, not literally talking about going and fighting someone, but figuratively. They understand, they've all been to journalism school, most of them, or if not law school. They understand how language works. They understand metaphors, similes. They understand figures of speech. But when it's Trump, they don't understand it. Now, I could not believe that Joe Biden put this lie about the bloodbath lie in his ad with the lie about the fine people on both sides. I just couldn't believe that.
That were very fine people.
Sides. Now the fine people lie has been debunked for years. This is real clear politics. Trump did not call neo-Nazis fine people. Here's the proof. The video used to be here, but it says, news anchors and pundits have repeated lies about Donald Trump and race so often that some of these narratives seem true. even to Americans who embrace the fruits of the president's policy. And so that's important. So even, people are buying these lies, even though people that support the president's policy. So that's what you have to understand. Going back to the podcast that I did about Christian nationalism last week, where we were talking about policy over personality. Democrats, the media, Joe Biden, they want to make this election about personality. And that's why they keep trying to paint Donald Trump as a racist, as a dictator, as a Russian stooge. It's all about personality because they don't want you to focus on the policy. Even to Americans who embrace the fruits of the president's policies, the most pernicious and pervasive are of these lies is the Charlottesville hoax, the fake news fabrication that described the neo-Nazis who rallied at Charlottesville on August 2017 as fine people. It's an absolute lie. And then they come down here and they show the context, the actual quotes of what Donald Trump said. I'm not talking about neo-Nazis and white nationalists because they should be condemned totally. He says that. He says that they should be condemned totally. The media cuts out the part where he says white nationalists and neo-Nazis should be condemned totally and just play the small little clip of him saying there are fine people on both sides without the context. And they're manipulating people that don't have two brain cells to rub together who can't figure this stuff out. They're manipulating very intelligent people, not just people with two brain cells to rub together. Very highly intelligent people are falling for this con and are being were manipulated by this. But it's not working anymore. I think that a lot of people are waking up to this. One of those people is Michael Rappaport. And Michael Rappaport, has been highly critical of Donald Trump for years, calling him names that I don't even want to repeat here on my podcast. But when the Israeli conflict broke out, and Michael Rappaport is a Jew, very loyal, passionate Zionist Jew, and when Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th of last year, when Michael Rappaport started to see the Hamas protests here in the United States and Hamas protest or the pro-Palestinian protesters shutting down traffic, tearing down flags in New York City where he lives and all this stuff, he started saying that look, we need to give Donald Trump a new look. And he's here on this podcast, and he is talking about the shame that he felt when he realized that he had eaten up this fine people lie, this neo-Nazis or fine people lie. I want you to take a look at this. It's very interesting.
So if you believe in the Obama doctrine, all right, be nice to each other, whatever. There's no way you were voting for Trump. It just wasn't in the cards. It wasn't happening. It was abrasive. He was racist. The media, yada, yada, yada.
And he was a joke. Like, New Yorkers, like, he was like,
yeah, he's a ball busting troll.
Exactly.
Here's why I think you're going to vote for him this time. Because you've seen what happened under his first term. You didn't like it. He's the, he's the pig dick and he's got the mean tweets and he's orange. But life was good. There was no wars. The economy was going good. But damn, he's annoying to look at. But you also can acknowledge that the media had a major role in that.
When you take a step back.
Yes. You also acknowledge that.
Because that one thing about the Charlottesville that I ranted about.
Yes.
And I was wrong.
About the both sides thing.
Yes. Yeah. Irresponsible.
And I respect
Let me hear him out. Hang on. Yeah. Go a little bit more. What do you mean by that? You were wrong on that.
No, because he said the both sides, there's good people on both sides. And when you see the full quote.
Yeah. Yeah.
That wasn't what.
Which they don't show you. They don't show you the full quote. They're not showing you the full quote of the bloodbath. statement. They won't show you that. No, because they can't manipulate you. They can't manipulate you and tell you that Donald Trump called for violence on January 6th if they play the quote of him saying that I want you to march down and be peaceful. I want you to be patriotic, which is what he said. They won't show you that. They cut that off because they can't manipulate you if they show you in context what he actually said. So a number of Americans, a large number of Americans have never heard Donald Trump say on January 6th, when his supporters were there at the Ellipse before they marched down to the Capitol, I want you to walk down. I want you to be peaceful. I want you to be patriotic. No, they won't show you that because they're trying to manipulate you. No, Michael Rappaport, they didn't show you in context that Trump had called the neo-Nazis and white supremacists at Charlottesville, that he called them to be repudiated. Totally. No, they're not showing you in the bloodbath quote that Donald Trump was talking about an economic bloodbath of the Chinese building manufacturing plants. He's talking about automobiles, but let's talk about this. Okay. Forget, you know, all of the personality debates. Let's just talk about the policy of what Donald Trump was talking about when he said bloodbath. It doesn't matter if it was automobiles or widgets or whatever it is. Do you support, as a policy, the Chinese building manufacturing plants in Mexico, manufacturing whatever it is, if it's cars, if it's widgets, if whatever it is, Chinese building manufacturing plants in Mexico to employ Mexicans at a cheap wage, and then having a easy way, because they're right there at the border, to just ship those cheap goods into the United States, into our market, and make tons of money and profit. Do you agree with that policy? Because forget everything about Donald Trump's personality and that he said bloodbath, there's going to be a bloodbath if he doesn't get elected and all that. Let's just talk about that policy. Do you agree with that? So that's what they don't want you focusing on. They don't want you focusing on the policy. So that's why they want you focusing on the personality. Let's listen to more of Michael Rappaport here.
Ranting about.
Yes.
And I was wrong about the both sides thing.
I give Michael Rappaport a lot of credit for this too, and being honest about the fact that he was wrong. But it took what happened in Israel and for people that he cares about in Israel to be attacked on October 7th and all of that to open his eyes. It took something like that to open his eyes, and then he could finally see the truth. And I give him a lot of credit for being honest about the fact. Yes. Now.
And I was wrong
about the both sides thing.
Yes. Yeah. And, but, so and I respect
so irresponsible.
And I respect the shit out of it.
Wait, let me hear him out. Hang on. Yeah. Go a little bit more. What do you mean by that? You were wrong on that.
No, because he said the both sides, you know, there's good people on both sides. And when you see the full quote,
yeah.
That wasn't what he said. And you know, I ranted on him hard for that.
Mm-hmm.
Hard. There's some video about it, whatever. Yeah. I mean, I ranted hard because I was like, what are you talking about, man?
Because you got played. And here's what this is why I think you're going to vote for Trump. Is because you, much like me, much like many people, independent thinkers, not the sheep, realize we kind of got played a little bit. Yes, Trump ain't exactly the smoothest character. He's not
Jesus Christ.
No, but he actually, his policies and who he has around him are way better than what's going on there. And here's my final point. You see what's going on with the border. You see what's going on with the wokeness. You see what's going on with culture wars. And you see what's going on with actual wars.
Yeah.
Specifically, you see who the Democrats have exposed their hand. Especially the progressive left. You see what's going on between Israel and Gaza. You have three starved David highs on your chest right now.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who is a proud New Yorker your whole life, you see what the Democratic Party has turned into. This DEI-ESG woke manifestation of ridiculousness, intersectionality, decolonialization. You're looking at that and you say, you know what? As much as I can't stand big dick Donald Trump.
You said
policy.
Fucking normal.
Policy.
At least he doesn't want to turn my boy into a girl.
Well, at least he's
policy.
Yeah. Yes.
At least he doesn't want to turn my boy into a girl.
Yeah.
At least he's defending Israel, not the fucking terrorists. And at the end of the day, I'm a reasonable person.
Yeah.
So like you said initially, I think I'm going to consider this.
Oh, I'm considering it.
Yes.
But to pull that, well, I don't know, we don't pull levers anymore.
Yeah.
Actually pull that lever.
Yeah, but pulling the lever for Biden.
Nah, he will.
Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I won't vote. I'm not voting for Biden.
No.
I'm not voting for Kamala.
I've heard so many people say that they're not ready to vote for Trump, but they're not voting for Biden. People that voted for Biden in 2020 as well. Man, I could do a whole show just on this, showing an entire hour just showing how Donald Trump was taken out of context. The media spun it up. And, you know, there's probably a million Americans that believe Donald Trump said drink bleach. Donald Trump never, ever told people to drink bleach, but there's probably a million Americans or more that thinks that believes that Donald Trump said to drink bleach. I could do an entire show on this, but we're going to get back into Ukraine and pick up where we left off in the last podcast talking about Ukraine. Now, in the last podcast, we were listening to this woman give a interview on BBC, and this is right after the Crimean referendum. And the BBC reporter is telling her that the referendum is not a valid referendum because the Russians were on the ground. The Russians were there with guns, and they were forcing people to vote for independence, and they weren't allowing people to protest against the referendum. And I showed you guys in the last podcast that was complete nonsense. We're going to get back into this interview. I want to just pick up where we left off and have some more that I want to share with you guys. So let's take a listen to this interview.
It's a new government which now sits in Kyiv. The first thing which they did, you remember, last time we met in your studio, I mean, my relatives and nobody in Crimea, they did not want to join to Russia. They did not want to annex. They hoped that they got rid of their corrupted president Yanukovych, and now something new will happen. But what they will see, we saw that the people who were in the power in 2004, who actually created this Orange Revolution, they again came to the power. But in addition, they brought Nazis, neo-fascists, xenophobians. They immediately forbidden Russian language. They started to give threats. That's what actually happened. That's why it became hysteria. And actually, the government itself pushed people to join together to take this decision in Crimea and to ask Russia, president of Russia, government of Russia, to help and to protect.
Yeah.
It's not like we are Crimeans. Suddenly, we decided out of why we would not start now joining the Russia. No. Yeah.
So no, what she's saying is that my family.
Well, it's not what we wanted.
But so she says my family, the people in Crimea, they didn't want to join Russia. They were forced into the protection of Russia by the Nazi government that had staged the coup in Kyiv. They had not only staged the coup in Kyiv, then they turn around and start to attempt to restrict the Russian language. They do other things, which I'm getting ready to show you, that show themselves to be hostile to us. So we had to turn to Russia for protection. And Crimea was the first. They were the first to put the referendum on the calendar to declare their independence. They were the first to invite the Russians in to protect them. They were the first to be annexed. So all of these other regions like Odessa, Kherson, Mariupol, Donetsk, Luhansk, all of these regions, when they move to declare their independence, or fight for their independence, respectively. And I'm going to show you what happens in these different regions. When these guys make their moves, they're following Crimea. Crimea is the leader. They're the first ones to move, to separate, the first ones to invite the Russians in. And they moved rather quickly. They had the referendum on the calendar the end of March. The coup d'etat had happened at the end of February. February 20th is when the violence started again. Yanukovych was gone by February 23rd, 24th. So the referendum in Crimea was 4 weeks later at the end of March. So the Crimeans had, they moved very, very quickly to protect themselves. Now, this reporter, this BBC reporter, challenges this woman again and says that all of you Crimeans are saying that the Russians are in Crimea for protection. You're saying that they're there because the Russian-speaking people are being attacked. We haven't seen any Russian-speaking people being attacked. We haven't seen any of these Nazis carrying out any attacks. And I explained in the last podcast that the reason you're not seeing that in Crimea is because the Russians are there with guns protecting the people. Now, I showed you in the last podcast about the Odessa massacre. I have another clip about the Odessa massacre. I'm going to play here for you and again here in a moment. But the Odessa massacre happens just, you know, 4 or 5 weeks after these people are having this conversation. So just because you didn't notice it happening in Crimea, that's because the Crimeans moved very quickly to protect themselves and the Russians came in. It's utter nonsense that there was no violence going on in Ukraine in these regions and that Russian-speaking people were not being attacked. It's absolute nonsense. And like I was telling you, that what happened in Ukraine in 2014, there were so many parallels, so many similarities to the Black Lives Matter, George Floyd, Summer of Love that happened here in the United States in 2020. You remember the George Floyd protests that they were going around the country, knocking over statues of, founding fathers. That's what happened in Charlottesville. They were bringing, that was before 2020, but they were bringing down the Robert E. Lee statues, but any other statues that were left up in the summer of 2020, they were bringing those statues down and toppling statues of founding fathers and prominent people all over the United States. That was part of their protest. Well, that's what was happening in Ukraine in 2014. The Nazis were going around. There were clashes with pro-Russian factions and the Nazis, and they were knocking over statues of Lenin all over the country and other statues that and monuments that had any affiliation with Russia. So they were bringing this into Crimea. If what I'm trying to tell you is that if the Russians were not there protecting Crimea, and if Crimea wouldn't have moved quickly within weeks of the coup d'etat, and those and the Nazis from Kiev, the right sector Nazis, the same Nazis that pulled off the massacre in Odessa, if Crimea hadn't moved quickly and Russian military was not there to protect them, then what happened in Odessa would have also happened in Crimea without a doubt. Take a listen to this reporter again.
I kept on hearing about that the Russia was taking this action to protect its citizens and that from a possible attack. I mean, we've had reporters in Ukraine. We've been trying to cover every aspect of this story. We haven't seen Russian speakers being attacked. We've seen in Crimea the intimidation of people who wanted to stay with Kiev. We've seen them being intimidated. We've seen people being stabbed in Donetsk and the like. But we haven't seen these anti-Russian attacks. I just wonder where they are. They part of the imagination?
Are they part of the imagination? So again, and this is just 5 weeks later, in Odessa.
Ukraine may be tense over what's happening in the east, but events in the city of Odessa have sent the country reeling. Dozens of anti-government activists there were burned alive on Friday by a mob of radical nationalists. RT's Maria Vanoshna is in Odessa for us. You may find some of the pictures in her report disturbing.
The Odessa massacre, as some are already calling it. People were burnt alive, suffocated to death.
This would have been Crimea.
And killed. It has become one of the bloodiest pages in the city's history since World War II.
This would have been Crimea. This would have absolutely, without a doubt, if Crimea would not have moved to separate and the Russians were not there protecting them, this would have happened in Crimea. And anyone who says that it wouldn't is lying to themselves, because there's no way. These people were going all over Ukraine after the coup to force these people to either accept the new government, to accept the Nazis, and if not, to leave Ukraine. That's what they wanted. They want one Ukraine nation and one Ukraine language, and that's what they wanted. So they were coming down to intimidate these Russian-speaking people, and I guarantee you that if the Russians were not there protecting the people in Crimea, this would have happened in Crimea.
The chain of events that led to dozens of deaths started with what has become Ukraine's new reality. Clashes between opponents of the country's current rulers, ordinary residents and members of the so-called self-defense units, and supporters of the interim government in Kiev, including football ultras and far-right members.
Usually these clashes were peaceful. Sides managed to agree without violence. But the first death stirred up further violence, and people lost their composure. They were ready to go to the end.
The end happened here, in Odessa's trade union's house. The epicenter of protests by supporters of Ukraine's federalization, this is where the so-called Maidan activists rushed to. They were destroying and burning the activists' tents. Many ran to hide inside the building. But what was meant to become a shelter became a graveyard for dozens after the building was set on fire.
So they burned people alive. This is out in front of the building where they burned people alive there in Odessa just hours after the massacre.
I can't sit home calmly and listen to what's going on here. They just used the opportunity where there were few people left in Odessa, people who went outside for holidays. They use this opportunity to get people inside the building and burn them alive. I can't keep calm about this.
The guilty ones must be found. Not only should they be fired from their positions, but they should also be legally prosecuted.
We're fed up with the situation here. We can't take it anymore, so we took down the Ukrainian flag and stamped on it and burnt it with pleasure. We don't trust anybody anymore.
So this is what this woman is saying. She's saying that exactly what the woman in this interview, in the BBC interview, is saying. She's saying that we didn't want to be part of Russia. The people in Crimea didn't want to be part of Russia, but the new government, the Nazis, they forced us into Russia's hands. That's what this woman is saying. She's saying that we took down the Ukrainian flags and we stomped on it. We did not want to be part of Ukraine anymore because of the way that they're treating us. Who's protecting this woman? Who's going to protect this woman? It's not the Obama administration. The Obama administration were backing the Nazis. They were backing the new government. Who's going to protect them?
We can't take it anymore, so we took down the Ukrainian flag and stamped on it and burnt it with pleasure. We don't trust anybody anymore.
This is in Odessa.
People were jumping out from the windows of the building, and the others were finishing them off down below. Help us, please, because this is genocide of our nation.
Who's going to protect these people? These people. So in Crimea, the Russians did come out to protect these people because Crimea moved quickly. If only Odessa could have moved as quickly as Crimea. But as you see, a lot of people in these regions wanted to separate. I want to show you. Hold on. Oh, this guy. Listen to this guy. So this guy's in Odessa. This is CNN interviewing this gentleman in Odessa that's got his face covered. He's a pro-Russian a backer, and this is right after the coup.
One protester who gave his name as Artum told me he was furious with the revolution in Kiev and wanted Russia to take control, just like in Crimea.
So he's furious with the revolution in Kiev and he wants Russia to take control of Odessa, just like Crimea. So what I'm telling you is that all of these regions, Odessa, when these people move to separate Mariupol, the Donbas region, all of these regions, when they moved to separate, they were following Crimea's lead, and Crimea moved quickly, and that's the only reason that there weren't huge riots down in Crimea. All right, so about a year ago, Elon Musk, on his Twitter account, it was Twitter back then, so I guess I can call it Twitter. Elon Musk tweeted this peace plan out. He had visited Ukraine and understand, this is back when Ukraine is using Elon Musk's Starlink system that is helping them execute the war against Russia. He was just giving it to them. He wasn't charging them any money for using this system. So he was very much in support of Ukraine by allowing them to use his Starlink system. And he went to Russia to Ukraine to meet with Zelensky. And then he came back and he tweeted this out, his plan for peace. He was eviscerated for it. I want you to look at Elon Musk. He has four different issues here, and he puts this out as a poll. And if you see, you notice the poll here, 63% no's and 36% yes. And again, he was eviscerated in the media by the Ukrainian government for daring to put out a plan for peace. Now, look at this first issue that he puts here, his first plan for peace. It says, redo the elections of annexed regions under UN supervision. Russia leaves if that is the will, if that's the will of the people. So who would have a problem with this, first issue in Elon Musk's plan for peace, to redo the elections? Because they tell us that all of these referendums that happened in Crimea, that happened in the Donbas region, that all of these referendums where people went out and voted, you're telling us it's about democracy, and you know that we're fighting for democracy, to keep democracy alive. So you're telling me that these elections that these people had, that they weren't fair, that the elections in Crimea weren't fair because the Russians were there with guns. Well, how about we do the election? You'll do the referendums over again, is what Elon Musk says. In all of the annexed regions where Russia has annexed Crimea and annexed Donbas, we'll bring in the UN and we'll do the elections over again. I guarantee you Russia would be all for that. I guarantee you if this was a negotiation and Vladimir Putin is sitting at a table and this plan for peace comes up and they say, well, okay, we're going to bring the UN in, we're going to bring in whoever you want to monitor these elections to make sure they're fair. And if the people decide that they want to be with Russia, then Russia stays. And if the people decide that Russia, that they don't want to be with Russia, then Russia leaves. I guarantee you in a moment that Vladimir Putin would agree with that. Why was Elon Musk eviscerated for this? Because the Ukrainians won't agree to this. The Ukrainian government and Joe Biden and the West won't agree to this, because the reason they don't won't agree to this is because they know if they do those elections over again that that the people will not unanimously, but overwhelmingly vote to join Russia. They know that. They know that the people in Donbass would overwhelmingly vote to join Russia. So that's why they were pissed off that Elon Musk put this peace plan together, because they don't want this. They don't want elections. They don't want democracy. And the UN, the reason that the UN would not come in and supervise it, because if you remember the phone call that we have, the leaked phone call that Victoria Nuland is having with the then prime minister of Ukraine when they're planning the coup and who's going to be in the government after the coup, Victoria Nuland tells Jeffrey Pyatt, this is the transcript right here, she says that she's got off the phone with Suri, who is the UN Secretary General, and Ban Ki-moon, and they agreed that Suri would come to Ukraine come in on Monday or Tuesday. And she says, so that would be great. And I think that it would help to glue this thing, to have the UN help glue it. And you know, F the EU. That's why she says F the EU, because we have the UN on our side helping to glue this thing. This is who she was talking about. Robert Suri, he's a Dutch diplomat, and he was the UN Secretary General. That's who Victoria Nuland is talking about in the phone call. And I got him and Ban Ki-moon from Korea. I got them on our side to help us glue this thing. So when Elon Musk says in his peace plan that we're going to bring the UN in to supervise the elections, the UN is on the side of the people who staged the coup. The UN is on the side of the West. So they're not going to come in and supervise the elections. And they didn't do it in the first referendums. They refused to come in when Crimea put the referendum on the calendar the first time and refused to come in and monitor the elections. Now, the people in Crimea brought in other observers from Europe, from other places around the world to observe the elections. But the Obama administration and the West said the elections were not fair because the UN was not there to oversee the elections. And the UN, if you listen to the phone call from Victoria Nuland, the UN had joined them, the people who staged the coup. Take a listen to this clip about the observers that came in to observe the referendum in Crimea.
The Crimean government has invited elections observers here from across Europe, but they're mostly Eurosceptics and Putin apologists, to endorse the referendum here today.
And you will not be scared by armed people around the city.
Okay. Now we want you. All of us have
the same.
I would like to see them somewhere.
Are you satisfied with this?
We haven't seen them.
We want to see them.
I mean, you need to go to the
city. I've not seen one.
Sorry, do you speak English?
Yes.
What country are you from?
Austria.
And may I ask why you came to observe this election?
I'm supporting the referendum. I'm supporting the idea of the referendum, so I have no problem. We have seen nowhere the army on the streets. I mean, we were in Yalta, so we have not seen one single army officer or soldier.
But have you considered the fact that maybe the people who invited you specifically took you to places where you wouldn't see soldiers?
We were spread all over.
Well, I've been here for 10 days and I've seen soldiers everywhere.
We haven't seen them.
The soldiers were there. The soldiers were definitely there. And I've explained to you why the soldiers were there, because the Nazis wanted to do in Crimea what they did in Odessa. So the soldiers were actually absolutely there, but they had nothing to do with the referendum or forcing people to vote for independence. It's, again, independence was something totally different from the annexation. Just because the people voted for independence didn't mean that Russia was going to annex them. As a matter of fact, I have another clip about that. This is the same reporter from Vice, and this is the day after the referendum. Take a listen to what he says here.
It's Monday, the day after the referendum, which the local authorities say passed almost unanimously in favor of joining Russia, and I'm trying to figure out what country I'm in. According to the officer in the military police station behind me, we're still in Ukraine, but according to the Russian soldiers standing by the APC, well, they're still not saying anything at all, but the local parliament here...
So listen to what he's saying. And again, this guy works for Vice, so if you can't tell that, I mean, he totally has a agenda as well. But, I mean, again, at least these guys are doing reporting. I mean, you noticed that I'm showing very few clips of American journalists that were there doing reporting. So I do appreciate this guy, even though I think that he has a bias being there and reporting. But he says that this is the day after the referendum, and the people that ran the referendum are saying, no, this is not Russia yet. Why is this not Russia yet? Even though the people voted for independence, this is because Russia hasn't accepted them to be annexed yet.
Standing by the APC, well, they're still not saying anything at all. But the officer in the military police station behind me, we're still in Ukraine. But according to the Russian soldiers standing by the APC, well, they're still not saying anything at all. But the local parliament here just appealed to Russia to officially allow them to join the Russian Federation.
So you understand what he's saying, that after the vote, then they had to appeal to Russia. There was actually a moment after the Donetsk and Luhansk referendum, the Donbass referendum, Ukraine separatists. Check this out. So this is May 12th, 2014. This is when this election happened in Donbass. It says Ukraine separatists declared their independence. So May 2014. Again, Russia doesn't actually annex this region until 2022. So that's 8 years later after they declared their independence. But after they had this referendum and declared their independence, they actually sent a delegation from Donbass to Moscow to meet with Putin to request that he annex them immediately. And Putin refused to annex Donbass back in 2014. Isn't that strange for a guy who's on the march and wants to gobble up territory and he's just annexing all of Crimea? Isn't it interesting that Putin back in 2014, when this delegation from Donbass went to Moscow to request that he annex them, he refused back in 2014. Why did he refuse to annex Donbass? If he's so hungry for land and to gobble up territory in eastern Ukraine, why did he refuse to annex the Donbass region in 2014? I'm going to explain to you why. It'll probably be in the next podcast because I can see that I'm running out of time. But where was I? I was going to show you guys. Oh, I wanted to finish playing this where he shows that. There is not that just because Crimea had voted for their independence, they're still not annexed yet. And the delegation is going to Moscow just like they did following Crimea again, just like the people in Donbass did, sent a delegation to Moscow and to have Putin agree to annex them. In the case of Crimea, Putin does it right away. In the case of the people from the Donbass, he sends the delegation back and tells them, we're going to support you in your fight for independence, but we're not going to annex you, is what he tells them.
In Ukraine, but according to the Russian soldiers standing by the APC, well, they're still not saying anything at all. But the local parliament here just appealed to Russia to officially allow them to join the Russian Federation as a new region.
I haven't seen these uniforms before. This is new.
This is the day after the referendum again.
Now that the Crimean parliament has officially requested that Russia allow it to become a Russian region, it's up to the Kremlin and Moscow to decide when Crimea becomes Russia.
See? So I just want you to understand this, is that the vote and the Declaration of Independence is different from the annexation that Russia had to accept them. All right, so back to Elon Musk's peace plan that he tweeted out. So they didn't like to redo the elections with the UN supervisions. That's not going to work. The second one here, Crimea remains formally part of Russia as it has been since 1783 until Khrushchev's mistake. And Khrushchev's the one who gave Khrushchev is Ukrainian himself. When he was the leader of Russia, he gave Ukraine or Crimea to Ukraine. Like I was saying, the naval base in Sevastopol has been there since Catherine the Great, since 1783. And that was the second part of Elon Musk's plan. Crimea remains formally part of Russia. They didn't like this. I'm sorry that you don't like this. When you finally go to the negotiating table, this will be the case. Crimea will never be part of Ukraine again, and I guarantee you that we will go to a nuclear war before Crimea becomes part of Ukraine. Crimea will always be part of Russia. So, but they didn't like this part of Elon Musk's plan for peace. The water supply. Now, this is a very interesting one. The water supply to Crimea is assured. Now, what's this about? Why would Elon Musk put this in his plan for peace? The water supply to Crimea is assured. I mean, you only have four issues here. This water issue, why is this such a big deal? We'll take a look at this clip.
A very different battle being fought in Crimea. It's being drained dry. Now, the North Crimean Canal is the peninsula's main supply, but the access to the river, which is right here, has actually been cut off by Kiev's orders, seen as a political pressure after the region reunited with Russia. That means residents going without basic supplies, as Neil Harvey reports.
So what the new government did, the new Nazi government, after the people of Crimea, they had the referendum to declare their independence, and they were formally annexed by Russia. This is in 2015. Then they dam the river from the fresh water coming from Ukraine. They dam the river so no fresh water is allowed to come into Crimea, and they do this immediately after the referendum and annexation of Crimea. This is what Elon Musk is referring to.
Pressure after the region reunited with Russia. That means residents going without basic supplies, as Neil Harvey reports.
For the people of Stary Kryn, this is a big day. It's the day the water truck comes. And it brings the locals rushing to gather the only water they'll have for drinking, cooking and washing for the next 2 days.
When they shut down the canal, it created a situation that affects all of us. Today, for example, I washed myself and used half a bucket of water. I don't even have enough for a normal bath. And what about the farms? What will they do now?
This is 77-year-old Valentina. And her need for clean water is greater than most, because not only does she need it for herself, but also for taking care of her bedridden son.
I mean, what kind of people, this just goes to show you, you know, how much contempt the Nazi government in Kiev, the Nazis, how much contempt they have for the Russian-speaking people in Crimea. What type of people cuts off fresh water to citizens that you're trying to recapture into your society, that you're supposed to care about and, You know, we're fighting for these citizens. Who's really fighting for these citizens? It was the Russians. The Crimeans are acting hostile to them. I mean, the Ukrainian, the new Ukrainian Nazi government are acting hostile to them in every sense of the way. Who would cut off fresh water to elderly people in Crimea just to what? What's the point of cutting off politically? What's the point of cutting off fresh water to people who need it? How is that going to make Crimea come back to Ukraine and feel good about coming back to Ukraine? It's ridiculous.
7-year-old Valentina, and her need for clean water is greater than most, because not only does she need it for herself, but also for taking care of her bedridden son.
You see, my son's paralyzed, and I have to keep the water I use to wash the bed sheets because I'll need it for flushing the toilet.
Wow.
Tina and her neighbors,
they got you people supporting this. They got people supporting Nazis and passionate about supporting Nazis that would do stuff like this. I just say, wow.
His bed sheets, because I'll need it for flushing the toilet.
For Valentina and her neighbours, these last 2 months have been tough. Within days after Crimea rejoined Russia, Ukraine had cut off the water that runs into this region's main canal.
Just a few puddles of stagnant water, that's all that remains now in the North Crimean Canal. No longer does the fresh water flow into here from the river Dnieper, and that's a problem that's left the residents of this region high and dry.
And it's not just the public who've been suffering, with businesses like this vineyard also feeling the heat as it faces up to the prospect of a lost harvest.
No water is coming in at the moment. We had hoped some water would still continue to flow. There was some still trickling down, but recently we found that they'd used sandbags to block the canal.
Russian authorities have been trying to ease the problem by finding alternative sources of water, such as by tapping into underground wells. Long term, though, the solution will need to be a political one, and that shows no sign of coming soon.
We are ready to pay Ukraine to give us back our water. We prepared the agreement and met with them 6 times.
Listen to this. The Crimean said that we're prepared to pay you for the water. Just remove the sandbags that you have blocking the dam. We will pay you that we have set up an agreement where we'll pay you for the water. They've met with them 6 times, and the Nazis refuse to release the water.
Wells. Long term, though, the solution will need to be a political one, and that shows no sign of coming soon.
We are ready to pay Ukraine to give us back our water. We prepared the agreement and met with them 6 times. But each time they say they don't like the agreement, that there is something wrong with it. So more time is wasted.
So they were doing the same thing with the Minsk agreements. They were just stall tactics. And I'm going to show you why, what these guys were doing. People, it is so sad that they have people in the United States of America supporting what these Nazis did. These Nazis, they were acting hostile towards the Russian-speaking people in Ukraine from the beginning, like real hostile and hateful type of tactics that these people were enacting on the Russian-speaking people. You saw it in Odessa. What happened in Odessa would have happened in Crimea if the Russians weren't there protecting them. In the next podcast, I'm going to show you what happened in Mariupol, and then we're going to get into the beginnings of the war in the Donbas. How can you support this, people? I'll be back on Friday, and like I said, we're going to get into this a little bit more. Thank you guys so much for watching, for listening, and I'll see you guys on Friday. Hope you have a